Making you home on a Monday, beautiful Monday afternoon. Blue skies, comfortable temperatures. It's the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix 4 to 6. Brett Rump, Caleb Hatch, you're connected on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862. What did you get from your sports weekend? What stood out for you? Let us know. We'll talk about it. We'll open up the text line, 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. You know, after this weekend in college football, so many crazy games. LSU gets the upset win over Florida, and to celebrate, they get rid of their coach. This was kind of in the works before the Florida game. Ed Orgeron is not going to be returning next year. Strange thing is he's going to continue to coach the team the rest of the season. Lame duck situation. I don't know how that's going to work, but it does give LSU a little bit of a head start. Them and USC trying to figure out what to do about their coaching vacancies.
Yeah, that part's bizarre, but you read the story that The Athletic had over the weekend, and it was clear that there was no way that his job was going to be saved after...
Not just what happened on the field.
Yeah. It was off-field stuff that ultimately got him in trouble. And then when the winning stopped, he was done.
Yeah, and what does that say about LSU? The fact that those things mattered when the winning stopped. They were willing to turn their head and kind of look past it as long as the team continued to win. Well, because this is the same situation they had with Les Miles.
Thought
they learned their lesson.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently not. As long as you win at LSU, you can get away with some stuff off the field and they'll sweep it under the rug and keep it quiet until they decide they don't want you as the coach anymore because you're not winning enough games. Who do you think ends up at LSU? Do you have a front runner, Caleb?
No, I mean, they're going to try to go after the James Franklins,
it's the Jimbo
same list Fishers.
USC put out.
Yeah, I mean, it's laughable if they think, I mean, they're going to get some of those guys.
Is it Joe Brady, the offense coordinator? Was it Joe?
The passing game coordinator, yeah, Joe Brady, who's back in the NFL.
Yeah, but would he leave the NFL to take a head coaching job? I mean, a lot of people give him almost full credit for that national championship. I don't know if he's prepared to be a college head coach.
That's the thing. I don't know if he's truly prepared. I mean, a few years ago, we saw it with Clemson, their longtime offensive coordinator, Chad Morris, and he got a head coaching job and flamed out very, very quickly.
46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. You know what's going to happen? And I just see this with, you know, Iowa earns a spot in the top four, and they're at number two. They get beat by a Purdue. And there's nothing against Purdue, but let's face it, if you're legitimately a number two team in the country and you're better than teams like Alabama and Ohio State, and they, according to the rankings, they were, you should not lose 24-7 at home to Purdue. Iowa was a fraud, and they've been exposed. This is going to be an interesting year as far as the college football playoff committee deciding who those final four teams are going to be, because I think I know the four best teams, the four teams that would put on the best show if you put them into the college football playoff. I'm not sold on Cincinnati. We'll see how the season continues to go. They're kind of my team that's on the bubble, just on the outside, not quite in. But if I had to pick the four best teams in the country right now, my choice would be Georgia, Oklahoma, Ohio State, and Alabama. Tell me I'm wrong.
I mean, to me, Cincinnati is in there because they're a legitimate team. All they can do is win handily against the teams they have left. And so far, they've done that, you know, since the big Notre Dame win. To me, they're in unless they lose a game.
Who do you take out? Georgia, Oklahoma. Let's assume that the teams I just mentioned, Georgia, Oklahoma, Ohio State, Alabama, win out. Of course, they can't because Alabama and Georgia would have to play each other. Boy,
to me, it ultimately comes down to Georgia, Alabama, assuming that's the matchup we get in the SEC title game. And whoever wins that is in. Whoever loses, in my opinion, is probably out.
I don't know.
If Alabama loses the second time,
they're
done.
I take what Georgia's doing. If they continue to do what they're doing in dominating opponents and just absolutely refusing to let teams score. I know Kentucky, got 13 against them?
Yeah.
You know, we're sitting here shocked that Kentucky scored almost two full touchdowns. But it's hard to take away what Georgia accomplishes throughout the season if they go into that SEC championship game undefeated and have a close loss to Alabama. Can they be knocked all the way from number one to completely out of the playoff? I mean, that would be hard for me to agree with. And then if Ohio State does win the Big Ten, Oklahoma ends up winning the Big 12 or whatever conference they're in these days, then I don't know. I mean, I still think there's Cincinnati is going to have to figure out a way to earn their way in without being a power conference team. And I still think it could be tough for the Bearcats to get in. They have to really crush teams. I know a lot of people can say they're undefeated. They might be the only undefeated team in the country come that point. We'll see what happens. But I truly think the four teams that would draw the biggest ratings, that would bring the best, the most eyeballs, and would provide the most equal competition with one another would be Georgia, Oklahoma, Ohio State, and Alabama. Now, Bama has holes, but Bama also has talent everywhere. And I mean, I don't know who you take out. That's the problem is I understand your argument, Caleb, that Cincinnati has earned a way in, but who deserves to be on their way out? And again, this is assuming, and a lot still has to be played. Ohio State still has who on their schedule? Michigan State and Michigan?
Michigan State, Penn State, and Michigan. I mean,
they still have all three of those?
All three. Oklahoma, I mean, yes, they came back with that wild comeback against Texas, but, I mean, they still have Iowa State. I know Iowa State's down, but Iowa State could do something. I believe they still have Baylor. Baylor's a team that's kind of making a run currently. Still going to have the Big 12 title
game. Rivalry
game
with Oklahoma State.
Oklahoma State, who's, like you said, I mean, they've been a surprise so far. These things work themselves out. I guess to me, Cincinnati, if they went out, they're in. That's a lock. Georgia, if they don't lose a game until the SEC title game or go undefeated, they're in. I think Ohio State, I mean, they have to win out to get in. And whoever wins the Big Ten winner with one loss is the lock to get in. I mean, I don't think that's a question. Cincinnati still has tough games as well. I mean, they walloped Central Florida over the weekend. And this is a down Central Florida team, but they still have SMU.
Well, that's what Cincinnati has to do. To take care of their business, it's not just about winning for Cincinnati because they're favored in every game they're mm-hmm. playing. It's about style points. And they can say margin of victory doesn't matter, but how you play does matter. And if how you play translates into a large margin of victory, so be it. That's one thing I think the committee is going to look at. Is if you're the best of the rest, then some of these teams you're playing, you should be absolutely dominating. Because we would expect an Alabama to dominate a Tulsa or to dominate a, who do they have on their schedule? Memphis?
Yeah, I mean, they have Navy on the road, which Navy has improved after a tough start. Tulane, Tulsa, South Florida. I mean, these are games they should all win by double digits. The home game against SMU, November 20th. That's the one.
Yeah,
if they win and win big, I mean, that sets them up for success. Then at East Carolina to close out the season before the AAC championship game. To me, they're in as of now. I still think we've had a very chaotic season, and I still think we'll see a lot more chaos. Because as someone pointed out, they said, are you kidding? Oklahoma has no business in the Final Four. Even if they finish the season undefeated, they actually suck. Well, I mean, if they're undefeated, they're in. But reality is Oklahoma's defense isn't that good. I mean, they have this issue every year.
No, but Oklahoma to me is like Alabama. I mean,
yeah,
you know, they can score points. They found their young quarterback who seems to be playing better than Spencer Rattler. And if you, I mean, if they run the table, like I said, if they run the table at this point, how do you keep an Oklahoma out? Right now around college football, for whatever reason, offenses rule and defenses are suspect. Even a lot of good teams have suspect defenses. Look at Florida. I mean, if they could play defense, they would not have lost that game against LSU. They just were terrible defensively against the Tigers. Alabama, they've given up points. They've not been perfect defensively. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. What about the game for the Purdue Boilermakers? I know there's a lot of Boiler fans that are out there. Of course, we have Purdue football right here on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Of course, we'll have Purdue basketball as well and a lot of hype and hope around the Purdue basketball team, ranked number 7 in the AP preseason poll that came out today. Boilermakers will be taking on Wisconsin coming up this Saturday. 2 o'clock will be airtime right here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. That precedes the Notre Dame-USC game, which is a Saturday night kickoff, national TV on NBC, but radio right here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. But the Boilermakers, almost a perfect, well-executed game, looked like they really took advantage of the bye week, and they cleaned up some things defensively. Their scout was excellent against Iowa. Looked like they knew how they wanted to attack them offensively. Defensively, I thought they did a great job of undercutting routes. Almost every time the ball was put into the air, the defender cut in front on the short side of the receiver, not afraid of a ball that could get over their head because they knew every ball was going to be somewhat of a short throw. And would they have 3 picks in the game against Iowa? I didn't count.
3 or 4.
There was actually one, I think, that got overturned or didn't get credit for on replay that I thought was an interception. But Purdue defensively was terrific against Iowa. They earned that win. As the Twitter said, Purdue beat the number 2 out of Iowa, and now you've got Iowa. They just have to hope they can find a way to get to the Big Ten championship game if they have any hopes of earning a way into the college football playoff. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Story of the NFL this weekend, Caleb, blowouts. Ravens just dominated the Chargers. Kind of makes the Colts' loss look better. Still kind of hard to swallow that the Colts blew the lead against the Ravens, but the Ravens 34-6 over the Chargers. And what about the Cardinals just embarrassing the Browns? You know, I feel bad about this because I picked the Browns as maybe a second best in the AFC when the season started. I thought you had Bills, Browns. I thought the Chiefs would still be a player. It's embarrassing what's happening in Cleveland. Baker Mayfield not looking good. Scrambling around, fumbling the football. The Cardinals, they just continue to prove they're legit. And I know it's hard to buy into the Arizona Cardinals as maybe being the best team in football, but they're still the lone unbeaten. How much credit do we give them?
I don't know if they're the best team in football, you know, overall. However,
on the road, wins against the Browns and Titans. Those look pretty good on the resume.
Those are
and the Rams.
Pretty good. Yeah. Yeah.
3 good teams they've beaten on the road.
I still think the Rams are the favorite for that division, down the stretch. But, I mean, Kyler Murray, he's playing at a high level. He's still on the rookie deal. They have great receivers. The defense is improving. I mean, this is a good team. There's a reason why I picked him to go to the Super Bowl, as crazy as that sounds, because
it did sound crazy before the season. It doesn't sound as crazy now.
I mean, they were a playoff team last year, and they were improving. They had some injuries toward the end of the year. They kind of set them back, but they're getting there. And when you have a good coach in Bruce Arians, I think that's the thing that helps them so much, is you have a great coach who can kind of help develop the talent moving forward.
Chiefs got back on track with a win over the Washington football team, 31-13. You wonder if all of the stories surrounding Washington could leak over into the way the team plays. They're having a disappointing year. Many people thought they would compete for the NFC East. It doesn't look like they're going to, and the Chiefs dominated them 31-13. Bengals, huge over Detroit. It doesn't matter if you are a tough guy taking the knees out on your opponent or if you're crying. It just doesn't matter in Detroit. All you're doing is losing. 0-6 now for the Lions after a 34-11 loss to the Bengals. How much do we buy into the Bengals and what they're doing? 4-2?
To me, it's an improvement over last season, partly because Joe Burrow's actually healthy so far. And if he can stay healthy, I think they'll have a chance. To me, their ceiling is still going to be that 8-9 win level.
And then Jaguars get their first win. Caleb, you and I picked this one, and yeah, we both got it right. Even with Tua returning for the Dolphins, the Jaguars get a come from behind win. How about the backup kicker, the guy they apparently was like an emergency replacement or something. He came in after an injury and he boots a 50-some yarder to tie it up, and then he ends up kicking the game winner. 23-20, Jaguars beat the Dolphins. Jaguars now undefeated outside of the United States, still winless in the U.S. But they have a win. First of how many?
Probably two.
Okay. And, of course, one of those will end up being against the Colts.
Right.
Packers. Caleb, you should have just gotten me straightened out when I tried to pick the Bears to beat the Packers. There was no chance. Packers win at 24-14. You know what I forgot? I forgot that Aaron Rodgers still owns them. Still owns them. See the video? Aaron Rodgers telling the fans, I own you. So, Packers beat the Bears. The Bears. Tonight, big Monday night football game. Should be a good one with the Bills at the Titans. If you're a Colts fan, you are a Bills fan right now because the Colts need help in the AFC South, and the Bills can provide it as the Bills visit Tennessee to take on the Titans tonight in Monday night football. 46862, that's the text line, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Coming up next, we hear from Don Fisher, and then we'll go to the text line for our next segment. So if you've got any questions, comments, or suggestions, fire away, 46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. We'll take a quick break. Don Fisher with our 15 Minutes with Fish being presented by Cruzy Automotive Service. That is next on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Welcome back to the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump, along with Caleb Hatch. And coming up tonight, we've got a good one for Monday Night Football. How about this matchup? The Buffalo Bills at the Tennessee Titans. Not only a good football game, but a very meaningful football game if you're a Colts fan. Somebody needs to knock off Tennessee, and the Bills might be the team to go into Nashville and do it tonight. We've got coverage courtesy of Westwood One starting at 7:30 tonight right here on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Indiana loses a 20-15 decision to the Michigan State Spartans on Saturday. So many things to discuss about this game and about the future opponent coming in on Saturday. And to do that every week at this time, we get 15 Minutes with Fish. It's Don Fisher, legendary voice of the Indiana Hoosiers, who joins us right now on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. You know, Donna, it's like everything that the Hoosiers needed to do to beat Michigan State, I felt like they accomplished, except outscore them.
Well, that's the nicest way you could have put it. That's really good, Brett, because there's no question that Indiana's defense played terrific in the ball game on Saturday. They held a Michigan State team that was averaging almost 500 yards a game to 240 yards, well below the half of what they normally are able to put on the scoreboard from a yardage perspective. The problem was that as good as the defense played, the offense played that poorly. And honestly, Jack Tuttle getting his first opportunity to quarterback this football team as a starter didn't play great himself, but a great reason or a big reason behind that not performing like he wanted to play, in my opinion, was because the offensive line, again, which I've talked about ad nauseum thus far this year, did not get its job done. They did not protect him. He was pressured the entire day. He threw a couple of interceptions. Those, of course, can't happen. One was his fault. The other, I don't think so much, just because of the pressure that he was having to deal with. But at the same time, Jack is not going to be able to perform if he doesn't have time to throw the football. And without question, receivers dropping a couple of passes again this year. Last year's receiver of the year in the Big Ten, Ty Freifogel, has had a very difficult time hanging on to the football. Had another drop, one or two passes in this football game on Saturday. The offense is just not getting it done. The run game was non-existent. They had to throw the football primarily because the run game wasn't performing at all. And that's offensive line play. Because Stephen Carr has proven when he gets a hole or some seams to run through, he's very talented and he gets the job done. But the offensive line is not doing its job. And that's the biggest issue with this football team right now. I don't know how you fix that because supposedly the best offensive linemen are playing at this juncture. But they can't open holes, and they are not blocking well enough to give the passing game a chance. So honestly, right now I think things look very bleak for this Indiana football team on the offensive side.
Defensively, though, you mentioned it, they played well enough to win this football game. If the offense would have just done something. Unfortunately, the offense actually did more for Michigan State than maybe it did for itself. Turnovers were a big part of this.
Well, there's no question. The two interceptions, a fumble, those kinds of things are what Indiana lived on defensively a year ago, and now it's everybody else living on those things against Indiana, because in every ball game this year, Indiana's had interception problems, with the exception of one, the Idaho game and the Western Kentucky games were obviously games that they were able to win, and they didn't make those kinds of mistakes, as many of them, we should say. But at the same time, you can't turn the ball over, give the other team short field and opportunities to score the football. Indiana was in this game the entire day because the defense held them in there. Indiana was leading at halftime 9-7. We're in three trips down into the red zone. They couldn't get anything more than a field goal. That's why they had 9 points. The defense held Michigan State to a single touchdown. That was a return of an interception for the touchdown. Michigan State scored one TD in the second half, and Indiana couldn't score at all. So when you look at, well, they scored a touchdown. I shouldn't say that. But look, this football team right now is struggling on the offensive side, and it's not, I don't know how it gets better, because if you're supposedly playing your best players in there at this point and since the season began in the offensive line, they've got a problem. And I don't know how you fix that. And that's the big issue right now with this football team. And I know after a bye week, you thought maybe this team could get things going offensively. It certainly didn't happen against the first opponent they faced in Michigan State.
How much of this is the scheme? When you say somebody's got to figure out how to get this offense going, and you, as you said, you don't have the answers. But that's okay, because you're not paid to have the answers. The guy who really is Nick Sheridan, and a lot of fans are pretty unhappy with Coach Sheridan right now.
I know they are, and you got writers writing about it. You've got the fan base upset about it. You've watched this football team this year offensively. It's not been what anybody anticipated that it would be. Sheridan's in his second year as the offensive coordinator. Obviously, last year they played very well. The offense did a really nice job last year, and it wasn't superstar status type stuff. It was just getting the job done. But this team is not doing that, and they lost one key lineman from last year's offense. That was Harry Kreider, the center. He's the only guy that didn't see playing time last year in this offensive line. So the question is, why? Why is this offensive line having so many problems compared to what they did a year ago? And was COVID a big reason behind that? Were the other teams that Indiana faced just not as good as they normally are? That's probably a part of it, why Indiana was so successful a year ago. But this team had so much going for it, so much momentum. You could feel the confidence building each and every ball game that they played. And, of course, that Penn State win in the very opening game of the season last year was a big reason this team started to believe. This team doesn't appear to have that kind of belief, that kind of confidence, especially on the offensive side of the football, because we've seen the defense play as well as they played last year all year long, and maybe even better in some cases. So I don't know what the answers are, but I do know the play calling has been an issue, just like the offensive struggles that they have had executing both the run and the passing attack.
How much of this, as far as where Indiana sits right now, how much of this is, first of all, maybe elevated expectations? Maybe they were a bit unrealistic. But let's be honest, this is one of the toughest schedules, if not the toughest schedule in the country. And there'd be a lot of teams in Indiana's position asking and searching for answers if they had this schedule up to this point.
There's no question about that. I mean, you cannot take away the fact that this Indiana football team has faced four teams in the top 10 in their six ball games thus far. I mean, it's just there's no way to get around that. So the schedule's been very difficult, and it's not going to get any easier here in the next couple of weeks. They play Ohio State this week, a football team that's ranked in the top 10 once again, and they lost one ball game and have looked like gangbusters ever since they had that loss to Oregon in the second game of the season. They had a nice win over Tulsa, and then they blew out Akron, Rutgers, and Maryland. And Rutgers and Maryland are both improved Big Ten teams that we saw early on in the season. How much better are those teams compared to what Indiana's going to go up against? Because they got to play both those teams yet. So, like I said, the schedule's been very, very tough. And you're right that we should give some credence to Indiana having played perhaps the toughest schedule in the country at this point. But we still haven't seen this offense perform like it's capable, or at least we thought it was capable of performing, and it doesn't seem to be getting any better. In fact, it seems to be getting worse as the season progresses.
That's trouble with Ohio State coming in this Saturday, because you want to be going into that game with some momentum, not playing some of your worst football. What can Indiana do to try to turn it around? And I'm not even going to say to try to win this game. I'm just going to say to compete with the Buckeyes.
Well, and I think that's the only way you can look at it, because if the offense can't put points on the scoreboard, it's going to be very tough to keep it, Ohio State at bay. And Ohio State, as everyone knows, they have the quarterback is a freshman, but he has looked really good in the last two ball games that they played, actually the last three. Against Maryland, he was spectacular. I don't have his statistics on the Rutgers or Akron ball games, but in the last three games, they have dominated their opponents. Akron, obviously, you would expect them to. Rutgers and Maryland, not so much, but they dominated those two ball clubs as well. Their offense is clicking. They've got tremendous receivers. Wilson and Olave are tremendous receivers. And they've got a running back, Travion Henderson, who has been terrific here. He's got 11 touchdowns already this year. And they just keep cranking out the offensive skill players each and every year, and the offensive line and their tight ends. I mean, they're just a spectacular program, not just a football team, but program. So you're going to have the challenge of your life coming into this ball game on Saturday. I don't know how Indiana holds them at bay unless it's the defense just playing as well as they played all year long and the offense not making mistakes. If the offense doesn't make mistakes and doesn't turn the ball over, they'll have a chance, maybe, if the defense can hold up. But that's the question. Can the defense continue to hold up against this type of competition?
Does Indiana have their corners back? I didn't have a chance to see on Saturday.
Absolutely not. Tywan Mullen did not play in this ball game at all because of a high ankle sprain. The other cornerback, Reese Taylor, tried to play early on. He went out of the ball game. Noah Pierre came in, backed him up, and played terrific. He led Indiana in tackles. He had a big interception late in the ball game that gave Indiana another opportunity to put points on the scoreboard, and they couldn't. But the corners were not back in this contest, and that tells you something about the depth of the defense, because when you don't have your two best corners in there and the other guys step up, you've got some depth in that side of the football.
Absolutely, and they're going to need them against Ohio State. By the way, I'll help you out, Don. C.J. Stroud against Rutgers, 17 to 23, 330 yards, 5 touchdown passes, no picks, so it won't get any easier at all. Always appreciate you, Don. We'll let you go, but look forward to talking to you next week.
Hey, Brett, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. That is Don Fisher joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. Our 15 Minutes with Fish every Monday at this time. Hoosiers, of course, against the Ohio State Buckeyes coming up this Saturday. What about Purdue? Man, I tell you what, we got to talk more about the Purdue Boilermakers, because Jeff Brohm got a huge win. And the tweet of the day had to be the Purdue Boilermakers football Twitter. And you always love college Twitter, where they said, "We just beat the number 2 out of Iowa." Love that. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. Of course, our 15 Minutes with Fish brought to you, as always, by Cruzy Automotive Service. We'll be back in a moment on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Welcome back to the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. Brett Rump with Caleb Hatch, trying to see Yeah, you know what? We talked about this earlier. I'm going on the text line. That interception by Kwity Paye ended up being overturned. I forgot about that because that was a clean pick. That was a beautiful pick. And yet they didn't give it to him. First, it looked like they were calling it an interception on the field. Then they said they didn't call it an interception. So when they went to replay, they had to have conclusive evidence that he did intercept it. And it looked like the evidence was there that he had taken it just before it touched the ground. But yeah, Kwity Paye didn't get credit for that. I forgot about that because I was watching that. Let's see. Oklahoma has no biz in the Final Four. Even if they finish the season undefeated, they actually suck. Also, we got love the beat the number two out of Iowa tweet. Been talking about that. Still trying to see. We had a number of these. Give a shout out to the South Adams volleyball team winning their fifth sectional title over the last 7 years, plus 20 plus wins. Over a in the last, what's it say, in the last 7 year span. A lot of text came in today. We get a Lawrence Johnson versus Big Joe Tippmann matchup Saturday. Oh, yeah. A couple of former SAC guys. I don't know if Big Joe Tippmann's playing, though, for Wisconsin.
He was earlier this season because I spotted him on TV during that Notre Dame Wisconsin game.
Well, awesome. Yeah, we will get that matchup then. All right, that's about it. I'll try to check the Twitter or the text line. You got anything to send to us? Give us your thoughts on the weekend. 46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Talking about Purdue, they have Wisconsin this week after getting the big win at Iowa. Aiden O'Connell was terrific at quarterback. You know, Purdue had such a quarterback controversy or debate, decision, whatever you want to call it, during the offseason. And certainly no mistake in the decision Saturday because O'Connell dropped in some perfect throws. What I liked was when he got guys open, he put it into a position that allowed them to run to the football and not take a break out of their stride. So like David Bell, he caught it on the full run and he was able to pull away from defenders and turn what looked like 10-yard, 12-yard plays into 20-yard, 30-yard scampers, got yards after the catch. And that's what I thought O'Connell did especially well. David Bell, might as well enjoy him while you got him, because I think this is it for David Bell at Purdue. He is going to be a valued guy, and I expect that he's going to end up as a slot guy in the NFL. Don't you think that's where he's going to end up? He's not going to be a wide receiver type. He's going to be more of a slot guy running those crossing routes. Isn't that what you see with him, Caleb?
I mean, he's got enough size. I mean, he's 6'2", so he's got the size. He's got the speed. I think he can play on the outside because, I mean, he's a guy who can do everything, whether it's, you know, battle on the edge, get stuff down the middle. He's a deep threat. I mean, this is a complete player and by far the best, I mean, to me, the best receiver in the Big Ten, you could easily argue, in all of college football. I don't think
Chris Olave would probably have something to say about that. Probably comes down to those two.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll see how they perform when they're matched up. But yeah, what's weird about the Purdue quarterback situation, so Aiden O'Connell was great on Saturday, but I mean, he's a guy who has struggled over the season, and Plummer on the year. I mean, he's got 7 touchdowns, no picks. O'Connell now up to 6 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. They're about the same completion percentage. Obviously, AOC with more yardage because of that big game against Iowa. But it's crazy how this position has kind of shifted back and forth through the season. But at least it's working. I mean, somehow Notre Dame's figuring it out, rotating in 3 quarterbacks. Purdue now rotating in 3 quarterbacks. If you win, no one cares.
Purdue, Ohio State, you talked about the head-to-head. That would be on November 13th, game time to be determined. And if Purdue keeps going like they played against Iowa, that could be an intriguing game going into Columbus to take on the Ohio State Buckeyes. Of course, whoever has the network rights to that game would be promoting it as kind of the rematch after what Purdue did to Ohio State a couple of seasons back. 4-6, 8-6-2. This came down to today. I don't know if you saw this. Dick Vitale, for the second time in just a few months, has been diagnosed again with cancer. This time, lymphoma. Last time, it was melanoma. This time, he's been diagnosed with lymphoma. He's going to begin chemotherapy treatments, and he said that he hopes to continue to do games during this basketball season in between his chemo treatments. So we wish the best for Dick Vitale, fighting cancer not once, but twice in a very short period of time. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. All right, so the Dodgers find themselves in some trouble. They're down 2-0 to the Braves after the Braves came back to beat the Dodgers last night, took both games in Atlanta. Now it heads out to the West Coast, where the Dodgers will be at home. I kind of feel like this is a hangover for the Dodgers after that big emotional series and comeback win against the San Francisco Giants. I think the Dodgers kind of felt like they had just won the championship and maybe didn't take Atlanta serious enough because they knew that the team they had to get by was San Francisco. They accomplished it, and then they weren't really ready for the Atlanta Braves. Meanwhile, the Braves finish off the Brewers early. The Braves get to wait for Los Angeles to fly out and come to town, and the Braves understand fully that they've got to play really well to be able to beat this Dodgers team, and so the Braves outplayed the Dodgers over the first two games, and the Braves have the 2-0 lead. I'll say this now, and I might eat this later, but I think the Dodgers still win this series. I think the Dodgers are a better team. I think overall they've got better pitching. I think they've got more clutch hitters. I know Atlanta has gotten some clutch hits. They got a couple last night, a couple huge hits. But I'm going to go with the Dodgers to still win this series. It might take them all seven games to be able to do it, but I like the Dodgers, and I think they'll come back in this series after falling behind 2-0. To the Braves. Also, Comets opening week. They will be at home coming up this Saturday. Just got the message that came down. I don't know what the follow-up has been with the Comets COVID situation. Of course, the K's had to miss both games over the weekend against Wheeling, their preseason exhibition games, because of a couple of positive tests for COVID. But the Comets apparently are going to be okay to prepare and practice and have their Saturday opener as scheduled. Meanwhile, Pacers are going to be on the road to open things up coming up Wednesday night. And we'll have Pacers basketball against the Charlotte Hornets. 7 o'clock tip. We're going to join that somewhere around 8 o'clock, right after the Tom Allen Inside IU Football Show on Wednesday night. By the way, a lot of money been passed around the NBA today. I mean, a lot of money. And one of the people that was in line that got paid, Malcolm Brogdon. Say it ain't so, Caleb. Please say it ain't so. I am not a Malcolm Brogdon guy. I think that the Pacers don't need Malcolm Brogdon. I think he should be a guy that's on the trade table, but you told me something that has really crushed me, is that this new deal with Malcolm Brogdon, no trade clause?
Yeah, because of this extension, he would not be able to be traded this season, is the understanding. And so he agreed to a two-year, $45 million extension, so now he's got $89.3 million over the next 4 years.
Can't be traded this season, but he can be traded during the course of the contract, just not this year.
Correct. That's how it was presented by Woj and Bobby Marks, who know way more about this stuff than I'll ever understand.
It's complicated and hard to keep up on as far as all the CBAs, but Isaiah Jackson's been terrific so far in the preseason. If he develops, I keep saying Miles Turner, Malcolm Brogdon, a package together to get a superstar, whether that superstar is a Dame Lillard. I don't see the benefit in a Ben Simmons, but there's been rumors that the Pacers have kicked the tires at least on Ben Simmons. But, somehow you've got to figure out a way to bring a superstar into town, and maybe that package together. But now that Brogdon has this new deal and he can't be traded, that puts that off the table. So we'll see where the Pacers go. But at this point, the Pacers will open up on Wednesday night against Charlotte. They've got another road game on Friday before they return to open up Gainbridge Fieldhouse. Didn't mess it up. Gainbridge Fieldhouse on Saturday, Pacers home opener. What else is happening? Oh, the Memphis Grizzlies just absolutely gave away money to Jaren Jackson. I think Jackson just kind of ripped off and stole money from the Grizzlies, because I personally, I don't think he's worth a hundred and some million over 4 years. That's star money, right? Jaren Jackson is not a star.
He's
tall, freakishly athletic, but not a skilled defender on the perimeter. Not a great ball handler. I don't know what you're paying him for.
I mean, with NBA contracts, part of his stuff is inflated, but I mean, he's a guy who you pay, what, 10 to 15 million a year?
I would have said 18 to 20, okay. But you're paying him over 4 years, 100 and what is it, 105, 110 million? It's over 100 million over a 4 year deal. I mean, you're starting to push that 25 million plus figure. I could see him, like I said, 18 to 20 million range, okay, in NBA dollars and cents. That's a good player. But I really don't know what you're paying him that kind of money for. I've just never seen it from Jaren Jackson Jr. And I think the Grizzlies got ripped. I think that Jaren Jackson Jr. just completely stole the Grizzlies blind by getting that kind of contract from Memphis. What's Ja Morant at? I don't know what Ja's making, but it'd be interesting to look at the comparison between Ja and Jaren Jackson. Because Ja, I don't know if Ja's into, I mean, he's still on, what, his rookie deal? He hasn't gotten the extension?
Yeah, he's at $9.6 million for...
So now you've set the bar. I don't know what the max is going to be, but certainly Memphis is going to have a lot locked up in Ja, Jaren Jackson. Because here's my problem with Memphis. You know I follow Memphis because of John Conchar. The third part of that is Dylan Brooks. And to me, Dylan Brooks is perhaps the most valuable player on Memphis because the way he defends, he is a gritty, tough defender. I don't know. I just think that's money that hasn't been earned in Memphis. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Quick timeout. We'll come back, wrap up the show. It's the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Always a packed show on a Monday here on the Sports Rush. Got to thank Don Fisher, voice of the Indiana Hoosiers, for joining us. Our 15 Minutes with Fish, you can catch it every Monday at 5:20, presented by Cruzy Automotive Service. If you missed it today, don't forget it. It will be available on our podcast page. You can find it by going to 1380thefan.com or listening and searching for the Sports Rush with Brett Rump wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. So tonight, it is Monday Night Football with the Bills and the Titans. Caleb, who do you have?
Got to go with the Bills.
And I will go with the Bills. Part of that is because of hope. It will help the Colts if the Bills beat the Titans tonight. We'll be back tomorrow. Catch you 4 to 6 right here for the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
Podcasts by Federated Media.